This episode is sponsored by High Spots, your one-stop shop for everything in the world of professional wrestling. DVDs from various independent promotions like PWG and CZW, shoot interviews like The Kevin Steen Show, t-shirts, books, masks, and even wrestling gear and rings. What do you need a ring for? I don't know, maybe you're going to create your own indie promotion that'll take the world by storm. High Spots has you covered. Go to missspots.com/highspots to buy yourself all those masks you've been wanting. I have a Delirious mask from High Spots that I wear around the house when Kevin isn't here. Don't tell him that. But you can do that in your own home. Again, that's missspots.com/highspots, because sometimes missspots and high spots just go hand in hand.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a speed event!
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Welcome back to the Miss Spots podcast, the pro wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling going on in their lives. So we decide to talk about it on the internet through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the victor to my Connor. Here is Kevin.
Ja!
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 Ja! All right, so we got Backlash, we got Raw, we got SmackDown to cover. We're going to try to get through it because I want to watch CWC. By the time you hear this, it'll already be over. Backlash, the first SmackDown-oriented pay-per-view from the new brand extension. I've thought that SmackDown has had the better storylines in the past 3 weeks leading up to this than Raw has.
I think they've been good storylines. Raw's always handicapped because they have a three-hour show to put on. So take out an hour of Raw. I honestly think the shows have been pretty equal. But there are so many things going on to SmackDown that just bother the hell out of me, like Dean Ambrose's character reverting back to Wacky Dean. Several of the storylines were rushed, like Ziggler and Miz. I mean, SmackDown might have been better, but it hasn't been great. Is that fair?
I mean, and of course, saying better is like saying it's better to be stabbed than shot. That might even be a terrible example, but
no, it's funny. There's a Lindsey Graham comment about Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, by the way.
So we didn't have many matches announced for the actual show, and we went over that on the last episode. We got a few more, and we got a pre-show match that was kind of thrown together because we got Baron Corbin against Apollo Crews. Even though we've been seeing Baron Corbin kind of be in a feud with Kalisto, but Baron even did talk about how I haven't been on TV for the past 2 weeks.
Well, he was supposed to be on SummerSlam apparently, and Kalisto was injured, and they've done some more like bully kind of things with Corbin. But Corbin had a good feud going with Apollo Crews in NXT, and I was sad that they didn't kind of expound on that a little bit more. But these are two guys, both who probably should be going over on matches nowadays, mm-hmm. right? These are two guys, up and comers. So to put them together, I thought this was a really good match. I think their chemistry together is really well. I am continually impressed by Baron Corbin and his ring work. He just seems confident, and he's got upper tier potential. He really has a lot going for him. The problem is that he's been in this limbo state and not really even been in feuds for the last several months. So hopefully they're going to continue this maybe, or maybe Kalisto will come back. Who knows? But this was a good match. It was solid. It showed them both off pretty well.
Yeah. I know a lot of people want to shit on him for whatever reason, but his in-ring work has improved significantly over the past 6 months, and his mic work, I think, has gotten really good. He looks confident in every interview that he gives, and it's believable in what he is saying.
He's got some polish on him now.
Yeah,
he was a work in progress for a long time, but he's done a really good job. This was a good finish with Corbin going over at Cruz, and just so I have to bring this up because you and I enjoyed it so much. On the pre-show, we did have the social media lounge with Rhino and Heath Slater, and it was the best social media lounge we've ever seen.
And that's saying a lot because we were huge fans of the Rusev.
The
one.
Rusev one was good. Tyler Breeze had a good one, but. These guys, we were sitting there as they were just basically cracking each other up, saying that all I want to do now is see Jericho versus Slater and Rhino because they're charismatic and they're playing off each other really well. I just thought it was a really cool thing.
I loved Rhino's character that he was playing. It was this kind of just like, as a matter of fact, straight-laced type of guy. Yeah, he cracked up there towards the end, but he was just like reinforcing or correcting Heath on things like, oh, well, you know, Roscoe got into trouble with the law. Oh, yeah. Well, you don't have to go to the community pool anymore.
Like, well, the fact that it seems like, I think you said it during that segment, that it seems like they're letting them riff and they're letting them be their own characters and they're not scripting them as much. And when you put talented people out there, this is what you get. You get really, really entertaining television, not bad comedy like we get so often. But I had to mention that.
Oh, that was very worth mentioning. I hope that they keep up the good work with that, and hope that they keep up the good work with Slater and Rhino. Moving on to the main show, we started things off with the Women's Championship 6-Pack Elimination Challenge. We had Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, Carmella, Naomi, Natalya, and Nikki Bella all in this match. We ended up with the feel-good story, Becky Lynch defeating Carmella last to win the inaugural SmackDown Women's Championship. As much I predicted Natalya to win the whole thing, you went with Becky. It was the smart move. It was the way to start things off right for this show. The crowd was behind her.
Pretty good crowd, right?
Yes.
Even with the
small market, like Richmond is compared to most.
Even with Corbin and Apollo Crews, they were really, really hot for that match.
Yeah.
They were hot early on. Listen, these are really hard matches to book. These 6-person matches. And I thought the first half of this match was very well booked. It was organized. I thought things were going very well. Things got pretty scrappy and pretty bad down the stretch. We had a couple, Naomi had a really rough, I think it was like a hurricanrana over the top rope that was just really, really poorly botched. And it got a little sloppy near the end. And this match, I think, did get hurt by the things that we talked about in the preview, which is that we just don't know who half these characters are. We don't really know who Carmella is, or we really don't know who Alexa Bliss is so much. And Becky Lynch, as far as being like the underdog and kind of the one of the four horsewomen that kind of didn't get her due before the brand split, we still don't really know a lot about Becky Lynch, quite honestly, other than that she likes to call herself Becky Balboa, which she should probably stop doing.
And she loves puns on the Twitter.
Yeah. But it was great to see her go over, and the crowd was very into it, and it was the right move. She should be the flag, the flag bearer of that division at this point.
Yeah. She was the first woman selected. Was she the only woman selected on the actual main show? I can't quite remember.
I can't remember.
But good for her. It's quite an accomplishment for her. Now she can claim gold as the third member of the four horsewomen to hold on to gold on the main roster. The last, maybe, if you want to count overall gold, because Bayley has held the women's title down in NXT. But I think that the future is bright there. My only gripe with this was that they had Alexa Bliss on the pre-show with her new kind of look, kind of Harley Quinn. Like, look, and I think, why would you spoil that on the pre-show when you could have had her come out for her entrance and kind of get some oohs and ahs for this cool new look to her?
That's not a bad idea. I understand where you're coming from with that. But by the way, the crowd probably didn't see much of that. filing in, and it probably was still kind of a surprise to the.
Yeah,
it wasn't for us watching the pre-show, but it was probably for the local crowd.
Then we had the qualifying match for the tag team tournament final. The losers from the semifinal match taking on one another. The Usos with a new, different look, a little more serious, all black, though still had the same music and the same Titantron video. That was a little awkward. You would think that in the few days leading up to that, someone in design would have been able to come up with
something a little bit different, yeah. A little less flashy.
Yeah. Even if the music might have taken a little while to come up with, you could have at least come up with a different Tron.
I don't mind the music being the same as much. They're not doing their the start of it, which is just like, I guess, their indigenous language kind of thing. I was very happy with the presentation of the Usos. The fact that they were in all black, and I thought that they worked a really, really good heel match.
Yes, they did.
Which we've never seen from them before. And I think that they did a good job of augmenting their offense. In the beginning, I was actually waiting for it to happen, but their posture was different. The way they played to the crowd was different. And, I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I feel like the refresh button has successfully been pushed with the Usos.
I would agree. Didn't get to finish saying who they were fighting. Oh. The Hype Brothers, as JBL is so eloquently calling them right now. But yeah, they worked a methodical game plan. They finished the match with I can't remember whether it was Jimmy or Jay. They're never going to make that easy for us unless they actually have their names on their clothing. I mean, Mauro still says Uso, and he's one of the best in the business. We got a tequila sunrise out of one of the Usos. Cool. We had some cool submission work done through this pay-per-view. The tequila sunrise was done there. Conan's finisher from WCW. And I know that we're both big fans of matches ending without the traditional finisher from time to time.
Yep.
Because it shows that anything is possible, and that the person has to always look out for that other move. If Dolph Ziggler won with a Famouser every once in a while, it would give it a little more intrigue.
Blow my mind.
I mean, he has won some matches with a super kick, and that's cool and all, but we never believe that he will win a match with a Famouser.
No one does. But this might not, listen, the big splash off the top rope, that's a babyface move. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're not doing that anymore. Maybe we're going to see
They did use it on Tuesday.
Yeah. I guess that's right. But didn't they also use it and then like to injure? Or we're talking about Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's not talking about injuring
Gable.
Right, you're right. I'm excited about this team that we have talked about many times being very stale, going in a different direction. They were the right team to win this preliminary match to go and face Slater and Rhino. So this was good booking.
Mm-hmm. I think it was at this point, just the quick results that I'm looking at doesn't have this here, that we got a backstage segment that showed Bray Wyatt attacking Randy Orton with a door, smashing his leg into a door frame, into a door between a frame. And this was playing off of the rumors that came out, the word came out earlier in the day that Randy was not fit to compete in his match that night. So this was their way of kind of writing a injury angle and writing him off. We then got the Intercontinental Championship match with The Miz defending against Dolph Ziggler. These two have some good chemistry together. They've always put on good, fun matches with one another. Miz continues to impress me. I can't speak that enough. This past Tuesday, I thought that he was even better than normal. But we'll get to that in a little while. Miz wins with a interference finish. Maurice sprays hairspray or some sort
I think it was arrogance.
Oh, it was.
It was arrogance, yeah.
I didn't know that Rick Martel ever put that out into the market.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and she stockpiled it since it was released at one time.
French Canadians love French Canadians.
That's true. It's very true.
And he's able to then get the skull crushing finale for the win, and Dolph Ziggler just continues to be there.
How about Miz's submission stuff? That was very much taunting Daniel Bryan, right?
Yes.
Cattle mutilation. I mean, there's...
No, he didn't use cattle mutilation. One of the women did in the women's
match.
Oh,
okay.
I want to say it was Naomi used it. But, like, he sank that figure four in pretty tight.
But he also used... Was it a bow and arrow? He used it...
Oh, yes. He used... He tried the Mexican surfboard.
Okay.
But he went back, not holding him up, but grabbed his neck and pulled him back. Yeah. And then he did a bow and arrow as well.
Miz,
all Daniel Bryan stuff. Yeah.
Miz looked very motivated. He looked aggressive. I loved every bit of this. I really have enjoyed Miz's work, and I'm hoping it's building to something. This match, there was nothing behind it, really. There's just no personal issue, really, other than what they've been fighting for, this Intercontinental Championship, on and off for 2 years now, it feels like. Mm-hmm. But seeing Miz go over in a heel way, that's perfect. He's holding on to that title by hook or by crook.
Yeah. And then we got about 12 minutes of bullshit. And that included Bray Wyatt defeating Randy Orton by forfeit because Randy Orton was not fit to compete. But no, Bray still has to have a match, and it's a no-holds-barred match against Kane. A match that Bray should have destroyed Kane in.
Oh, just it should have been a glorified squash match.
Yeah. This should have been 5 to 6 minutes of Bray throwing Kane around, maybe put him through the table. Sister Abigail, good night. But instead, we got a nearly 11-minute match that Kane won because Randy Orton, who was not cleared to compete, came down and RKO'd Bray. He takes a choke slam. Big Red Machine wins.
This is just garbage. I cannot express that more. This build to the Orton-Wyatt feud was poor from the beginning. I don't think they paid off anything. They just didn't have enough time. It wasn't interesting. Randy wasn't able to compete, so they do an injury angle and say, okay, well, Bray hurt Randy because Bray hurts people. That's what he does. Okay. It seems like they can't go all in with this guy. So then they say, all right, well, now Bray's the kind of guy who will attack you in the backstage. That's the kind of guy he should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets beat by Kane. I don't care if Randy Orton interfered. Randy could have interfered afterwards. Randy could have hit him with an RKO, and they could have progressed this feud. But having Kane pin Bray Wyatt in any way, shape, or form is ludicrous. We were talking on the preview that both Randy and Bray need this win. Right?
Yeah.
And they had it. Randy couldn't compete. So who gets to win? Kane? It's just idiotic. This was just poorly done. It was poorly booked from the beginning. It was a bait and switch. And instead of using that bait and switch, instead of using Randy's inability to compete to actually do something for Bray, they just 50-50 booked Bray Wyatt with fucking Kane. It's nonsense. Mm-hmm. Just hot garbage.
Well, at least after that, we had some more good stuff. We had the tag team tournament final to crown the first ever SmackDown tag team champions. And also with the stipulation that if Heath Slater and Rhino win, Heath Slater earns a SmackDown Live contract. They take on the Usos. We had Heath playing a very extended face in peril. And ultimately, Rhino and Heath go over clean, beating the Usos to claim the tag team championships. Heath cementing himself into the SmackDown Live roster. It was a absolute feel-good moment. One of a great payoff to a very well-written story. Probably one of the only well-written stories that is going on right now. And a glimmer of hope that someone or some people know how to write a good, captivating wrestling story right now.
I love this. The evolution of Heath Slater in this way has been impressive. But let's just remember, there's been some bad stuff booked in this along the way too. But the overall likability of Heath Slater's character, the ring work, the odd couple pairing with Rhino and him, it's just worked. This reminds me a little bit of Sandow. This reminds me of a bit that probably shouldn't have gotten over, but it did. And who knows what they're going to do with it. They decided to give them the tag team titles, which is great. So I thought this was wonderful. I mean, the crowd was into it the whole time. They created a over babyface with Slater and Rhino as a tag team, and that they didn't have before.
This whole storyline started off with Heath as a delusional heel.
Right.
That he is the free agent and he is who everyone wants. And he'll be able to find a tag team partner, no problem. And it was a reluctant Rhino teaming up with him. And now, like, you would expect if they just wanted to keep him in that way, it would have been Heath saying, I won this, even though Rhino did all the work. And he's giving Rhino credit for everything. He's thanking Rhino for everything that he's done. Like, they've become a team.
Yeah.
Still a little bit of an awkward, weird team, and they know that.
But there's fun. There's fun there, yeah. And there's genuine humor in their pairing. I'm a big fan of this all the way. This is, to me, listen, Becky being crowned as the first women's champ, and we now have the first tag team champ for SmackDown, both are really good feel-good moments, but this was probably better for me.
Yeah, I agree. I've never been so happy to see this oddball pairing tag team as I have with these two. And then we have the main event. The World Championship is on the line. Dean Ambrose defending against AJ Styles. I thought that we had a very good match here. It wasn't AJ Cena quality, but it was a very fine match to enjoy. AJ wins with a low blow, then a Styles clash to get himself the win. The whole debate is whether or not he actually needed to use the low blow to get the win, but he's the bad guy. He's the heel. He's going to use techniques like that. And,
well, the most interesting thing about this match to me was about halfway through, the crowd turned on Dean. Dean was a babyface going into this, and obviously a lot of people love AJ Styles, whether he's a heel or not, because that's the day and age we live in. But by the end of the match, you were hearing boos when Dean was on offense and cheers when AJ was on offense. And I don't know if that's because of the poor storytelling and the way they booked Dean. I have to believe it's part of it. But Dean just did not work as a champion, and you and I have been hoping for him to have a really solid run for a long time. And I think that they did him no favors with the way they booked him. And this is AJ Styles' time. I'm glad they pulled the trigger with it. Who knows where they're going to go in the future? They might, you know, that belt might flip-flop back to a few other people, as we've seen a couple days later, what they're setting up for the next pay-per-view. But, I mean, AJ Styles has been an MVP of this company since he came in, and his work was as solid as it ever is going to be. And winning with the low blow, I'm perfectly fine with this being a heel. I thought it was great.
I do too. And we now have a person who is been the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, and now WWE World Heavyweight Champion. There's no one who's ever held all four of those titles before.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Quite an accomplishment for a guy who just made his debut in WWE 9 months ago. So awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing what more he can do. Tuesday gave me a little bit of a damper, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So that was Backlash. What would you give it as a grade?
I did not like this pay-per-view.
Really?
I did not like it. And this is the main reason. Look up and down this card. How many personal issues were involved in this card at all? How many real feuds were involved in this card at all? To me, you've got two tournaments, essentially. One was a cap of a tournament with a tag team, and one was a multi-woman tag, not tag match, but a multi-woman match for a championship. No, I mean, there was Carmella and Nikki Bella feuding in that, and there was some other things going on, but no real personal storylines in either one of those matches at all. Corbin and Apollo thrown together on the pre-show. We know that there's some backstory, but still thrown together on the pre-show.
Pre-show.
Miz and Ziggler thrown together and not really expounded on very well. Wyatt and Orton, and what turns out to Wyatt and Kane, complete garbage. There's only one match in this entire show that has any real storyline behind it, and it's the main event. And it was well done, but that doesn't make a pay-per-view for me. I was very disappointed in the overall presentation because there was nothing to really be excited about, in my opinion. So I'm going C minus.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give it a B. I thought that the action was good for the most part. They weren't given much time. It was only 3 weeks in between SummerSlam and Backlash. So I think that they did all right with what they had. Yes, I hated Wacky Dean. That was part of the storyline with AJ, but I think that they worked well with what time that they had. I think you had some very feel good moments for it. You had good action. That's why I'm going to give it a B.
Yeah. What you're saying is not, I don't disagree with it. I look up and down that card. There's not a single match on that card, maybe other than AJ, that I'm really going to remember down the road.
Hmm. Okay. So, moving on to Monday Night Raw the following night.
Yeah, Monday Night Raw opened with,
How weird is it that a Raw, that is after a pay-per-view has no bearing with that pay-per-view? It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And, I have not been a fan of the idea of the brand split from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of the way they're booking these extra pay-per-views. Quite honestly, I think we're going to see more and more of this, which is thrown together matches that don't have much storyline continuity. But anyway, what we do get is Mick Foley opening up a Raw, and we have authority figures. And quite honestly, didn't an authority figure open up the main show on Backlash?
Oh, yes.
Right? So we can't just get the actual talent to be the most important thing. It all has to be about the GMs and the owner and all this other garbage. And I'm sick and tired of it. I'm going to point it out every single time because it's way too much. Foley, they start out with a women's segment, which I enjoyed, other than the Foley involvement in it. And he invites Charlotte out, who comes out with Dana Brooke, which is kind of bizarre because the smack from the week before, this, that, and the other. Charlotte wants an apology from Dana, whatever. Sasha and Bailey come out, and Mick, after way too much talking between all of these, and I thought this was way too much talking for this segment, we basically get Mick saying, well, you know, we had a match set with Sasha versus Charlotte at Clash of Champions, but I got a better idea. Let's have a match, a three-way match with Sasha, Bailey, and Dana to see who's going to be in that title match. I'm just not a fan of this. We have Sasha, who has a rematch clause storyline, to come back against Charlotte, who, even though she beat her clean, there was some brutality in there. There was an injury angle in there. The story's set. We don't need to throw in this monkey wrench at all, but they do it anyway because they need to fill time on Raw because they got 3 hours.
Yeah. And we got similar bullshit like this on SmackDown the next night.
Absolutely.
And we'll get to that in a bit. I mean, make it one or the other. I'm sick of these multi-person feuds. Like we had the Shield feud for a hot minute. And I want to see two people be able to work a story with one another. Just like kind of old times sakes.
Throwing an extra person in there every now and then is okay, but
it happens
way too often because they're trying to fill time, and we see these people facing off against each other way too often. I was not a fan of any of this. I love Bailey. I'm glad that they actually got Dana involved in a match because she's green as grass and she needs some work. But this was not the way to do it. We end up with the match starting right now, where Sasha pins Bailey with a flash pin where both of their shoulders were down.
Oh, yes. That was a double pin to the max.
Yeah. Now, I guess they could say that, that Sasha was actually on top of Bailey because her legs were pinning her down. I don't know. In general, this whole angle just overbooked. We don't need it. Sasha is on a mission to prove that she has the heart to take that title back from Charlotte, bar none. That's the way it should be. And this wasn't necessary. Pin or no pin.
Yeah.
We end up having the Shining Stars are actually selling timeshares. From the very beginning, you and I and everyone on the internet have joked that they're basically, they're not, they don't even have, their character is that they want you to visit Puerto Rico. And now we actually see them
agents, yeah.
as travel agents trying to sell timeshares to Puerto Rico. And of course, who are they selling it to? R-Truth. That was somewhat interesting. We end up having Enzo and Cass spoil the festivities, if you want to call it that. And the only good thing about this whole segment for me was the fact that Enzo was upset that he couldn't understand Primo and Epico insulting him, and he was going to get Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to learn Spanglish.
Yeah, he's going to get Spanglish, yeah. So that was the best part about that. But are you serious? We're actually getting them selling timeshares. Were you expecting this? Because this to me is like a joke on us.
Yeah.
Kind of, in some way. Moving on, Owens is back with Tom Phillips, and quite honestly, didn't
Tyler.
Really, what's oh, you could call
that's yeah, what yeah. he called.
Oh, he called him several names, and then yeah. Jericho did too. This was a perfectly fine little promo from Owens. He didn't really say much, but he carried himself like a superstar. Jericho walks in and says other things that are very kind of charismatic and but not very interesting. We end up having Jericho setting up the fact that he's going to do a highlight reel with Sami Zayn later on. I mean, these guys are money on the mic. Just nothing in this segment really added much to the story, in my
He's
opinion.
He's a stupid itty.
It! I've been listening to some of our older podcasts, just kind of seeing where we've come from. And you and I insulting Chris Jericho is like 6 months in a row.
Yeah.
Of us just insulting Chris Jericho. This Chris Jericho is great.
This Chris Jericho is amazing.
Yeah. Really, amazing. Really good. We get back in the ring. We get Bo Dallas coming to wrestle a jobber. And Bo continues in kind of his aggressive streak. And it's weird to see Bo Dallas and Braun Strowman both and Nia Jax all getting this treatment. It's like one of these things is not like the other. Right? That game, kind of thing.
There was a Let's Go Jobber chant.
I was going to say that. There was a crowd chant of Let's Go Jobber, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. Once again, Bo is aggressive. He gets the W and takes his little lap with his sign. I don't know if Bo Dallas can come back from what he's been done to him, his character, but they're giving it a shot, which I kind of appreciate. Anything to say about that? Okay.
He's your boy.
We love Bo. I love Bo, at least. But I love delusional heel Bo more than I like aggressive Bo, quite mm-hmm. honestly. If I had to pick one of the two. We have Jericho and Sami Zayn on the highlight reel. What did you think about this segment? I'm just interested in your thoughts.
Honestly, I don't remember a whole lot about it. I know that Sami was playing very white meat baby face. He was playing to the crowd by bringing up the hard workers of like Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero, which got some pops from the crowd. But it seemed like Jericho was in his mode, cutting down Sammy, cutting down the ole ole chants. And Sammy's just seemed very aw shucks to me. Recently, he is just like, yeah, he's playing the whole underdog thing really to a T. Like, I might not be the biggest dog in the fight, but I got the heart. And one of these days, I'm going to have that Universal Championship.
I thought this was a good back and forth between the two. I loved Chris Jericho hitting him in the head with a cell phone.
The phone part was good.
And
yeah,
I did
that
like
was very Paul-y.
I love the comment early on where Jericho says, I have Kevin Owens' new phone number. Do you have that? As kind of,
I remember that.
I like the fact that they have this kind of cheesy relationship with him and Owens, and it's worked out really well, which is surprising to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jericho goes over, not goes over, but hits him with the phone and hits him with a code breaker. And we get a match set up for a Clash of Champions between the two. This should be a pretty good match.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is one of those ones, which is a very quick build, but I kind of like it. I think that they did enough with that one segment and what they've done in the last week or so to make this work. We have the next match in the Best of Seven series with Cesaro and Sheamus. Cesaro won at a house show in Europe,
yes.
I believe, to finally get on the board and come back to a 3-1. And we get a match that is very similar to the matches they fought for the past several weeks. This is one of the things that happens in these best of seven kind of series. Still hard hitting. I'm really enjoying it still. But the finish was very particular. And what did you think about the finish?
It was interesting with him using his feet on the rope. I'm trying to remember all of Sheamus's wins. And was there one that he cheated to win?
There might have been, but I thought I was under the impression they were all clean.
I thought so too, because there was the one submission win in the whole thing, and I thought that was the most recent one, his third win. But it's weird for the babyface to resort to cheating, kind of out of the blue like that. If it's tit for tat, I can understand.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like that it could, because we can't even remember if that has happened. I think it is too long for the casual fan to remember. Oh yeah, the baby face is cheating because the bad guy cheated. I don't remember
yeah,
that.
I'm just not a fan of Cesaro cheating to win. I don't think it's necessary. I think that the story is that he got bat on the board with 3-1. He's an underdog. He's coming back from this, and he should win. He should win cleanly. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of like a huh? Why are we doing this kind of moment? I also think that no group of people runs a phrase into the ground like the Raw announce team, because they keep talking about establishing dominance. These are the ones that are going to establish dominance over the other. You know, I think that the future title shot that they've been promised is a little more important than establishing dominance. It drives me crazy every time they say that.
I also think that Cesaro will be repackaged as K-Tape Man by the end of the year.
He could be the Yeti. We get Mick and Seth backstage, and I was interested in this segment mostly because Seth still feels like he's playing a heel to me.
Mm-hmm.
Very cocky, very arrogant. He's going to get involved if he wants, but is this a slow burn turn? Is that what you think is going on here? Or are we going to get a smarmy heel Seth forever?
WWE will always leave me confused about what they're doing. And that's probably a good thing, because they don't want people to be able to pick up on their little nuances all the time. I would like to think that this is a slow burn to a face turn, but at the same time, wouldn't be surprised if they're just doing this to be like, fuck you, we're just going to keep him as a heel.
I mean, but what we saw later on, we're going to have heel versus heel then at the Clash of Champions? It just doesn't seem right to me. With Roman involved, I'm sorry, we'll get to that. But still, I just thought it was kind of bizarre. We get Nia Jax versus Alicia Fox. And after getting slammed in the face with a cooler or something the week before, which was hilarious because it was apparent that Alicia Fox didn't mean to do that. And Nia
and then
Jax,
they showed it again.
And then Nia Jax could destroy her legitimately. We don't really even get a match here. I mean, they go to the outside. Nia Jax ended up spearing Alicia Fox through the ringside barrier.
After a number of ragdoll slams into the barricade.
Yeah.
Those look pretty brutal.
This is a lot of people are annoyed when they see Braun Strowman and Nia Jax come out and just beat jobbers for a while, but it builds. It takes time. Right now, this is the perfect time to have her fighting Alicia Fox and ragdoll her around like that. We can't put her in the title picture yet. There's other people going on with that, but I can see her being Sasha's challenger down the road. It would be a mountain to overcome.
Yeah.
So, we got a no contest with that. The New Day come out. And I feel too often in the WWE, and please tell me if you agree, that it's too meta to the point where the week before we had one of the worst segments probably in the brief last couple months of Raw with the Old Day and Anderson and Gallows playing the fools continuously. And the New Day basically come out and tell them that they are not allowed to be entertaining or try to be entertaining because that's what they do. They're entertaining. And just basically say this was pure garbage.
And they apologize for the segment.
And say that you wasted everyone's time. These are the kind of things that we say on our podcast, but they said it in the ring.
Yeah.
Do you like this? Did you find this kind of tongue-in-cheek thing okay?
Okay, I kind of like it, but for the most part, I don't, because you are bringing to light more your faults, like the things that you've screwed up on. You shouldn't be talking about them. You should be moving on past them. That was a very low point in the New Day's career, I think, last week. Definitely in Anderson and Gallows.
Oh, completely.
And that should have been a thing that just wasn't talked about. If they wanted to start getting things back on track, they should have just forgotten about that, just had New Day cut a normal promo and have Anderson and Gallows come out and be serious and not bring up any of that shit ever again.
Well, we did get Anderson and Gallows coming out being serious. They weren't dressed as doctors and they weren't advertising a retirement home anymore. They must have seen how bad this was. And they decided, okay, let's go in a different direction. Because the rest of their segment was Anderson and Gallows being badasses. Right?
Well, all it was Anderson and Gallows saying a few words and then walking down to the ring for their match. Like, they really got little to no mic time.
But that's kind of probably a good thing considering the mic time they've gotten recently.
Yeah, that's true.
But then we get, which I was perplexed by, they're fighting a Clash of Champions.
We got the Clash of Champions matches. Now, probably it's going to be Big E and Kofi, but still, for all intents and purposes, we got the New Day versus Anderson and Gallows, which is the Clash of Champions.
Why are they giving us this match here? And, I mean, this is the same burnout overload that we get with so many matches on the WWE, is that we see these matches so many times, by the time it gets down to the payoff, we don't care anymore. And this is just another example of it. This was a long match. This is a very long match.
10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, for a Raw episode, and Anderson and Gallows go over, this just seems lazy, lazy, lazy booking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah,
and it's probably around this time that I started kind of just not caring about this show.
Well, it would go on. Roman Reigns is backstage with Tom Phillips, and I don't care how many times you say the word ass, Roman, no one, you're still lame. Sorry. Jinder is in the ring, and Jinder Mahal is now saying how he is a peace-loving person. He's traveled the world, and he wants to bring peace, and he's all about peace. Kind of tough to do that when you are supposedly beating people up for a living. I mean, I guess good luck with that. He then starts speaking Punjabi, and then Swagger comes out. This just feels very dirty to me. This is a foreign heel kind of gimmick. So this guy comes out, says he's about
the day after the 15th anniversary of 9/11.
This guy comes out, says he's about peace, speaks in a foreign language. And then our American hero, Jack Swagger, comes out. How are you supposed to think this is being booked? This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
This is really embarrassing. We end up having Jinder go over Jack Swagger. And apparently this was Jack Swagger's last match on Raw.
He said his contract was up. Apparently you only have a 3-month contract with the brand split.
Well, my favorite thing is that I think Cole said, as we all know,
yes,
Jack Swagger's contract with Raw is up. Did we all know that? Did we, Michael? Did we? Jinder has a neck breaker finisher. Is that his normal finisher?
It's been a long time since I've seen Jinder win a match, so I don't remember what his actual finisher was. It's a slick little transition move. It's not a finishing type of move.
No, it's a transition or a false finish move. Mm-hmm. I didn't like Rusev plays the foreign heel. I think he does it better than pretty much anyone since the 80s. But there's so many sensitivities with anyone speaking Punjabi, with anyone speaking with any
Middle Eastern. Do you know how many people probably thought that he was a Muslim?
Yeah. It's too much. Please don't do this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't have any interest in this whatsoever.
It's 2016. We don't need to do this.
Yeah, we don't need this Muhammad Hassan. We don't need these. We don't need this at all. Epico is facing off against Enzo, trying to get a little bit of payback for the flash pin with the tights that happened the week before in their tag match against Enzo and Big Cass and the timeshare salesman.
I was glad that Enzo didn't give birth to anything else this week.
Which was fantastic. Enzo and Cass actually did a very short, sweet promo coming to the ring, which I can deal with that. End of the day, Primo holds down Enzo's feet for the pin. 2 weeks in a row, the Shining Stars go over. Is this a good idea?
Yeah, I think so. As I believe we said last week, it would take a lot more to take the wind out of the sails of Enzo and Big Cass. They are stupid over. And being able to build some heat around the Shining Stars with some dastardly wins, I'm all for that because it keeps the storyline going. It makes the fans even more invested. Like, God damn it, these people keep on beating my favorite wrestlers. Awesome. And like, it makes them believe that Epico and Primo are real threats.
Because they can bend the rules. And listen, I'm glad that this feud is going forward because it gives Epico and Primo something to do.
Mm-hmm.
More than anything,
they're extremely talented guys. They deserve it.
And selling timeshares is not the best way to present them. But hey, listen, at least they're getting some time on Raw. I want to say this: we got Enzo, or not Enzo, we got Owens and Rollins backstage again before this championship match. How good is Owens on the mic?
Wasn't a championship match.
Oh, I'm sorry for the match. The
right to be in
the right in the match, be in the championship match. Thank you for correcting me. How good is Owens on the mic? He was so gold in this promo, cutting down Rollins.
Who's the best person to ever exist in the history of the world?
Me?
See, so he is you.
Okay. This was just so good. And this is totally heel versus heel. I love, you know how much I have been annoyed by Seth Rollins' laugh.
Yes.
I've told you this before.
I love it.
I know you like it. Owens told that his laugh was annoying. I was just sold, and I was happy the rest of the evening. Not the rest of the evening, but anyway, I have this Kevin Owens being on the show as being the title holder. I don't necessarily agree how it was done, but man, is he good! We end up with going into the main event, which is Roman versus KO. Good match, right?
Yeah.
I mean, pretty long match, aggressive. We just have Owens not being able to put Roman Reigns away.
Oh, yeah, that was really bugging me towards the end there.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, and we had a couple interferences here, but we ended up with Rollins was told by Mick Foley, do not interfere in this match. There will be repercussions if you interfere in this match. And what does Rollins do? Interferes in the match. He attacks Kevin Owens, so Owens Reigns is DQ'd, so Owens wins, which means that the match between the two at Clash of Champions will be just a one-on-one match. Or so we think. Foley comes out, reprimands him, says, we need to talk.
It was so like mom and son. Like,
we need to have a talk, I think he said in the backstage.
Yes, that was.
And he restarts the match. And we continue with this. Owens just not being able to. Roman Reigns just fighting from underneath. He's a strong guy. He's Superman. The crowd is behind Roman, by the way. I thought the crowd was very pro Roman Reigns.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
The finish of the match, we get Rusev coming back from sabbatical, I guess from his, real life honeymoon. Tries to interfere, just enough distraction for Owens to hit the pop-up powerbomb and get the victory. So we get Rollins and we get Owens, which should have been the match at Clash of Champions. That's the match we get.
And then afterwards, we get a Rusev beatdown on Roman, puts him in the accolade, and Rusev Machka.
this was the right finish for this, but it's another one of those examples of we don't really need these kind of play-in matches. Let's just have the match. Let's just have Rollins and KO. Let's just have that. I mean, it was true. Roman was just as screwed as Seth Rollins was, but the people want to see Seth Rollins and KO more than they want to see Roman Reigns and KO and Rollins.
Yeah, I'm for that.
But we're going to get what we want, and most likely we're going to get Rusev and Roman Reigns at Clash of Champions as well.
Yeah.
I just hope that Rusev goes over.
me too. Me too.
But anyway, we got a roundabout way of getting the matches that we wanted. Can we just say that?
Yeah.
We got the one-on-one for the women's championship. We got the one-on-one for the universal title.
And I'll also say that, this was an awful episode of Raw, I think, as a whole, other than the last 20 minutes.
It was just too much. A lot of convoluted booking and just, working too hard to get something.
I doze off probably two or three times, only to like wake up and be like, oh, wait, what am I applauding? And
I've seen you do this before.
And then also, it just, for the first Monday night football night, they really didn't do a good job of trying to keep people watching.
Oh, and they got crushed in the ratings. They're one of the worst Raws of in a long, long time, as far as ratings go.
So let's move on to SmackDown Live. And we are introduced to the face that runs this place, the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, AJ Styles. And AJ declares that the champ is here. More placating to John Cena.
But wasn't he the champ that runs the camp?
Then he does determine that he is the champ that runs this camp. And, although I don't ever recall seeing AJ in Camp WWE, I know John Cena wasn't there quite a bit. And there was a point to where he said that five times in a row. I'm the champ that runs the camp. I'm the champ that runs the camp. Almost as if, like, he's supposed to get cut off by someone's music and someone's missed the cue right now. He's just like, will someone freaking do this already? And then we do eventually get the music of one John Cena, who comes out and he says that, Styles has something that belongs to him. AJ's like, oh yeah, I got your headband right here. Here you go. I don't even want the thing anymore. And John's like, no, you still have something that belongs to me. Well, John, you haven't had that belt for many, many months, well over a year. So you're going to lay claim to that title. This is again playing on the John Cena wants to tie the 16-time championship reign of Ric Flair. And eventually, you know what? Dean's like, shit, I should be out there. I'm the former champ right now. So Dean goes out. Dean cuts a really good promo, in my opinion. This back to serious Dean. He lays into Cena, calling Cena old and over the hill. That
a part-timer, right?
Yeah. He says that he doesn't deserve to be there anymore. And then we get Shane comes out to deal with all of this going on. And he says, you know what, Dean, you are the former champ and you will get your rematch one-on-one. But John Cena is going to get a title shot. But so are you. It's going to be a triple threat match at No Mercy for the world title. Fucking multi-man shit again. So, also, why does John Cena get a title shot against AJ Styles after AJ beat him clean in the middle of the ring at SummerSlam?
I don't know.
John Cena.
Yeah.
Not John Cena.
Yeah. I will say that I am less upset about Cena being interjected into the world title picture now because he's been away for so long. There was a little bit of, you know what? Having Cena chase that is not a bad idea right now. I just don't think it's the best idea to have against AJ when they just finished up the feud where AJ won convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like too much.
Yeah. I mean, it's still fresh on everyone's mind because he has been claiming that he's the face that runs the place. He's wearing Cena's wristband or headband, whatever band. This is not necessary. If they want to give Dean his rematch, give Dean his rematch, keep that story going on. And you know what? Bring John back in another month or so, or bring John back and get him involved in another feud and work his way back into that picture.
I would like to see John Cena be very upset that he couldn't beat AJ Styles and have to go on a little bit of a redemption storyline. Mm-hmm. Would have been nice.
And I was thinking when he's like, you have something that belongs to me. I'm like, you're not Rusev. because the U.S. title's yours. I mean, it's the most recent thing that you've held. But moving on, we had the replay number one of Backlash, the Usos taking on the Hype Brothers, and this was just filler, really. Usos win in a little over 2 minutes. They won with the big splash, and that was that.
Well, this is just the Usos lost the title, so they need to give them a win back, and they give them a win against the same team they beat, you know, two nights before. Rinse, wash, repeat.
Kurt Hawkins vignette, this time like an actual live one. He says things. Okay, facts. Then Miz came to the ring with Maryse, and I haven't really noticed it, but I've loved since Miz has changed over from all the silly stuff that he's wearing to really nice suits. I think it still fits his character.
Oh, for sure.
Great. And he looks great doing it. He cut, I think, an excellent promo, and he built up the IC title as being a main event title and a title that should matter. And he wants to bring relevance back to it. And Dolph came back out, signaling that their feud is not quite over yet. And then we eventually get Brian coming out as well. Brian and Miz have a lot of good chemistry together, I think. And if this is some elaborate story to get Brian back into the ring, like WWE is really okay with him getting back into the ring, I don't think
it's going to happen.
They need to stop toying with people's emotions then. Because I would love to see this at this point. I mean, when they did have their feud very early on in Brian's WWE career, it was nice because Miz was the face that everyone wanted to punch at that point in time, and Brian was able to hit him very hard, but both of them had changed incredibly in their career since then, and Miz is at the top of his game right now, and this story has me intrigued because I want to know what is going to end up of Brian and Miz at this point. I'm really interested. I'm invested.
I'm just very interested to see how Miz is going to continue to hold that title. I want him to break Honky Tonk Man's IC title reign. I do.
Yeah. Then we got Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin were scheduled next for, you know, Backlash replay number dos. But that doesn't quite happen because Baron attacks Crews before the bell, lays him out at ringside, and Jack Swagger comes out. Oh, yeah, because as we all know, Jack Swagger's contract with Raw was coming to an end.
Oh, I heard that too.
At 12:01 a.m. that day, he has become officially a member of the SmackDown roster, and I don't think Jack Swagger knew what he was saying. The fans didn't know what he was saying. This was so confusing.
Well, I guess we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel right now, aren't we, for SmackDown, is that they're going to bring over a guy who hasn't won a match in 6 months.
Yeah. And is it going to be against Baron Corbin, or is he just there to be there? Or what?
Well, listen, I'll tell you this. Swagger's an okay guy to put over Baron Corbin. I'm fine with it. If that's what they're going with, they're actually going to get Baron involved in a feud. Okay, I'm cool with that. But I thought that the Apollo thing was going on, and I thought the Kalisto thing still has legs. But, hey, I don't know.
Then we got Becky Lynch coming out, and she had an interview in the ring with Charlie Caruso. The You Deserve It chant. Is the You Deserve It chant worse than the This Is Awesome chant at this point?
They're both bad. This was okay. Okay, Becky does deserve it.
Yes.
Right? Kevin Owens pointed out the week before exactly how stupid that chant is. Like when Kevin Owens says, "You don't tell me what I deserve. I'm the fucking heel. I know I deserve it. You people are idiots." He did a good job with that too. So sometimes it's okay.
And she cut a little bit of a promo, of course, playing on her Becky Balboa thing. She's in Philly, so yeah, those words mean a little something. Then we got a fatal five-way match to determine the number one contender for the SmackDown Live Women's Championship.
No one really can book anything other than just the match that we've already seen before, right?
Yeah. They're like, all right, let's do the six-pack elimination thing again, but minus Becky and just one fall. And this was just a lot of pretty much paint by numbers until the end. The end I was actually a little thrown off by, because we had Carmella out of the ring for a long period of time while then you had all of the Flash stuff going on. And like, oh, well, Carmella's been out of the ring the longest. That means she's going to be the one to come in and steal the win. And that looked like that was going to happen, but Alexa Bliss came in, threw Carmella out of the ring, and got the pinfall on a super kick Nikki Bella. Alexa Bliss is the number one contender for the women's championship.
This was a good decision, in my opinion.
This is going to be a nice, fresh.
This is a good feud. I like this a lot. I've been a big fan of Alexa Bliss's work down at NXT. I think she still needs some more polish, but I think she was going in the right direction. I love her look. I like her. I love her as a heel. I'm very happy with this.
I'm looking forward to what they do there. It is going to be brand new, fresh for the main roster, and hoping for good things from that. Shane McMahon is in the ring for the contract signing of Heath's SmackDown Live contract. He brings out the new tag team champions, and Heath cuts a little promo thanking all the fans, thanking Rhino, thanking his family. He plays up the ECW chant that Rhino gets, and he signs on the dotted line and says that they'll take on anyone, anywhere, any place, and then out comes the Ascension. And they are, with new face paint, I guess, taking over the place that the Usos left out. And said, okay, you wanna fight? Then you can fight us. And Shane makes the match. And, for the first time, we actually get to see the dismantlement of a contract signing, ring, setup. And then this was exactly how you thought. Heath gets, face imperiled for a little while. The hot tag to Rhino. Rhino gets the gore on Victor, and the champs retain.
They've just done such a poor job with so many talents on the roster, whether it be Raw or SmackDown, but, you know, for a long time it was both combined. The Ascension are just a joke. You can't think of them as anything but that at this point. And they have too many people on the roster that are that. And that's why this didn't matter.
Oh, I can't believe that I forgot. Actually, I can believe that I forgot that during the opening promo we had that Daniel Bryan, when he set up that three-way match for, or was it Daniel Bryan? No, Shane set up the three-way match for No Mercy, that he also said that there would be a tag team match at the end of the night with Dean and John taking on AJ and a teammate of his choice. And at this point, after AJ had looked all over the locker room for a tag partner, asking Baron Corbin, asking Kane. Those were the only ones that I remember him going up to. Brian goes, you know what? Your time's up. Have you found anyone? No. Guess what? We have a partner for you. And it's James Ellsworth, who was the first jobber that Braun Strowman destroyed.
The guy without a chin?
Yes, the guy without a chin.
Chinless.
Yes.
Chinless with McNo face.
And there he was, standing right there. Then Randy Orton heads to the ring to talk about the whole Bray Wyatt thing. I thought that he talked about things pretty well when he came out and RKO'd Bray in the middle of Bray's match. And Bray's response was to come on the Titantron and to say Bray Wyatt things. The screen went dark after the brrr, and oh, Bray is at ringside. Oh, things go dark again. Come back on, and Eric Rowan's in the ring. Eric Rowan has rejoined the Wyatt family for the 7th time at this point. And he eats an RKO for his troubles.
Several weeks ago, Bray walked away from him with disgust. He crushed a sheep's mask. The WWE creative staff cannot figure out what the hell to do with Bray Wyatt. It's like every week they start all over again. And now Eric Rowan is back with him, even though he wasn't there before. It is pathetic.
I don't know if where Luke Harper is on his rehab, if he's ready yet, or if he's still rehabbing his injury. This would have been a great way to bring Harper back if they would have let Harper actually destroy Orton. But this just is what's going on here?
They changed courses every other week with Bray Wyatt, and they have been doing it for years now. It's just, I don't know what to say. Book him as a serious threat by himself or with the Wyatt family. I don't give a shit anymore. Book him like he matters. If not, then stop. Then do something else.
After this, it is main event time. AJ Styles comes out to the ring, followed by his tag team partner, James Ellsworth. And Ellsworth is attacked by The Miz on his way to the ring. Skull-crushing finale on the ramp. Miz decides, nope, I'm going to be the partner of AJ, because he says, I'm not doing things on your time anymore, Daniel Bryan. I have a contract renewal coming up. I'm going to do things how I want to do them. So he has inserted himself into the main event match against John Cena and Dean Ambrose. We get a nice little match between these guys. It's really nice to see Miz in a main event picture.
I like that a lot.
With three definite main eventers out there. And
but then what happens?
He eats the attitude adjustment for the win for the babyfaces.
Of course he does, because Miz doesn't matter when it comes to those other guys.
Yeah.
Because your IC champ is still not that important because of booking problems.
And after the match, we have the faces celebrate until Dean hits John Cena with the dirty deeds. The crowd boos heavily. Now, I was very concerned about this because, one, it is in Philadelphia, which is the city of my birth, and also notoriously smart fans. And for people who are big fans of Dean Ambrose and very anti-John Cena, this didn't make much sense. I was very curious as to whether or not those boos were piped in. Someone wanted to say on Twitter, well, it's a live show, they can't do that. They have control over the whole sound system. They certainly can pipe that stuff in.
But listen, Dean has not been getting great reactions recently. I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. But yeah, is that surprising? It certainly is. But what are they trying to do with Dean? I like Dean being a wild card. I like that. I don't like Miz just being in there to eat a pin. This to me is a perfect example of a match that should have ended in a no contest.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to pin any one of those guys in this situation.
Yeah,
there's also no goddamn reason to put the three guys in that match against each other in a main event of a SmackDown. There's no reason to do that. It doesn't do anyone any good.
Yeah,
it just makes us more familiar with those guys working with each other. It's stupid.
So that is Backlash. That is the shows after Backlash. We got Raw leading into Clash of Champions in a few weeks, and we got a month or so still left before No Mercy, the next SmackDown only pay-per-view. Anything you want to add into all of this?
No, I think I'm good.
Well, I'm going to watch the Cruiserweight Classic here. Already am kind of watching it over to the side on mute. We are not going to have an episode next week. I will have an article up on our website, MissSpots.com, MissSpotsPodcast.com as well. I also encourage you to go back and read Kevin's article from a few weeks ago on Halloween Havoc 98. Brilliantly written, very funny.
Thank you.
It's one of the more terrible pay-per-views that have ever existed. And he did a wonderful job of bringing all of that insanity into perspective.
Well, thank you, sir.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we're always live tweeting along to Raw, SmackDown, the pay-per-views, even sometimes NXT when I have a chance, Cruiserweight Classic. And that is at Miss Spots. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can get the podcast in one of a number of wonderful ways, whether that be iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or Google Play Music, all of which that you can subscribe to so that you can get brand new episodes every time we upload a new one and automatically have them on your device of choice. Until a couple weeks from now, my name is Mike. This is Kevin. I usually say for Kevin, I am Mike, but I don't care. It's late. I want to watch some wrestling. Good night. Good wrestling.